Well, this morning we're talking about paying your debts. And I chose that sermon title in particular because it's, well, provocative is too strong a word, but because it picks up on a notion that for most of us is second nature, namely that of paying our debts. That's what we do. We may not do it as quickly as we like, and occasionally not as quickly as the bank or a credit card or somebody would like us to, but we take these obligations, we take them seriously. I've, in the course of sort of a medium-length life so far, I don't recall meeting anybody who likes being in debt. And I've only met a couple of people who have just, in a sense, sort of ignored the notion that they're in debt and just not paid any attention to it at all. And even there, it's a bit... It's still not something that they don't care about at all. A friend of mine, when he finished his university with a sizable bit of student debt, and when he went into university and was supposed to after high school instead of a number of years later as I did, and so he graduated right in the middle of the recession of the 80s. So he had nothing. So he went to Zimbabwe to teach English, which was use of his education, paying back to the world, but didn't bother to tell the student loan people that he was leaving the country, which, by the way, you're not supposed to do, because he just didn't care. He figured, whatever, take care of it. When he came back to the country, the second phone call he received was from the student loan people. Hello, David. We see you're back in the country. Let's talk about repayment. So even if you don't care about your debt, somebody else most certainly does. And where this comes from, as much as anything, is from Paul's letter to the church at Rome. We're going to talk about our New Testament readings. We're going to talk at least a little bit about both of them. And Paul begins, depending on your translation, by saying, "Owe no one anything except to love one another." And so if we owe somebody, if we have a debt, we need to pay the debt. And paying the debt of love, is easy. Well, at least mostly easy. We look at what Paul talks about. He says, "For the command, you need to fulfill the commandments. You should not commit adultery." Okay, that's pretty easy. "You should not murder." That's even easier. "You shall not steal." Well, that's occasionally tempting, but most of us manage that one pretty well. "You shall not covet." Now, that one's hard. It just is. Somebody said the problem with the Ten Commandments isn't the Ten Commandments. It's the Tenth Commandment about coveting. Because that's the one that's going to get all of us eventually. But still, in any other commandment, they're all summed up in this word, in the word, love your neighbor as yourself. And you think about this and you think, if that's the debt I have to pay, really, in many ways, it's easy. It's not simple and it's not the easiest thing you'll ever do, but if this is the debt of love that we owe to each other, it's summed up in what you might think of as the golden rule. Love your neighbor as yourself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And it's easy, not because it's simple, but because it's nice and contained, and it's something that we can always figure out. The golden rule is wonderful because it's something that you can make clear to very young children to help them make good decisions about how they treat people. And it is just as easy for us to do the same. The thing I find about whenever anybody wants to challenge you on this whole golden rule, is the first thing they'll do is they'll bring up, somebody who, does weird things to themselves, so of course they're going to do that to others. And I say, well, that's a reasonable objection, I suppose. How many people do you know like that? Well, and nobody seems to know anybody like that. It's the theory that there might be some maniac out there who likes hitting themselves in the head with a stick, so they're going to come and do it to you, thinking they're fulfilling the golden rule. I mean, that's just foolish. The number of people like that, I think, are an acceptable minimum. Let's just pay attention to this and look at this as an obligation, because that's the other thing about paying this debt of love. We need to realize that when we love our neighbors as ourselves, we're not doing them a favor, and we're not doing God a favor. We're being obedient to one of the commands of Jesus to us. And the fact that this command is one that fills us with joy for the most part and all that shouldn't change the fact that this isn't an optional requirement. This isn't something that those of us who are in a relationship with God through Jesus get to decide whether we want to or not. It doesn't say love your neighbor when you feel like it. any more than the Ten Commandments are the 10 suggestions that you should do if you're having a good day. This is something that we are required to do, which I think is one of the reasons why Paul put it in terms of a debt. Debts matter. They need to be taken care of, and they need to be taken care of in the appropriate way. And Paul gives us several ways that we do it by keeping the commands, and then goes on to say that love does no wrong to a neighbor, which in a sense sort of sums them all up, reminds us again to live honorably and all of these things that we want to do, but that we need to do as well. I sometimes wonder why the Presbyterian Church, or at one point I wondered why the Presbyterian Church uses the debt and debtors in the Lord's Prayer. And the simple answer is that that's the most direct translation of the Greek. The word in Greek is debt. And I think it's important for us to think of it as something as significant as that. That debts matter and they need to be paid, and they need to be paid in the right way. We pay our debt of love by loving each other. We pay our debt to the bank by giving them their money back. That's the other thing we need to keep in mind, is that we pay debts in the appropriate way, not how we feel like it. Going to your banker when your mortgage is due and saying, "I really love you." Well, first of all, they'll probably think it's kind of creepy, but then they'll step back and perhaps say, "Well, thank you, but you still need to pay us the money. That's what we want. You can love us or not, that's irrelevant. It's the money that's the debt that needs to be paid back." Paying the debt of love that we have to each other means that we need to treat people as we want to be treated ourselves. We need to love each other as we love ourselves. We need to obey these commandments, which, as I said, is rather easy. But paying the debt of love isn't always easy, or at least it can be more difficult. And it's not too much of a stretch when we look at our Matthew reading, where this is another way that we discharge this debt of love. Jesus says, "If another member of the church sins against you, go and point out the fault when the two of you are alone." And then goes on through this process, the Matthew 18 process of resolution. The resolution of disputes in the church is one that you'll run across fairly frequently. Why would we do this? Well, it comes back to this debt of love. If we love the people in the church, and we have a disagreement with them, we have a problem with them, if we love them, we'll do something about it. One of the ongoing cop-outs in the church, in relationships all over, is where people won't address issues in the relationship and hide behind this idea of, "Well, I love them and I don't want to hurt their feelings." Well, no, you don't. What you do is you love the lack of conflict. You love the status quo, perhaps. But to say that you're not going to address an actual issue that you have with somebody else because you love them is either self-delusional or self-serving. It's tempting to say that we're not going to do this because we love them, but if we really love them, we're going to go and address this. It's like with our kids. How many times have you, in some interaction with children, your own, grandchildren, whatever children are closest to you if you don't have children of your own, have you said, "No, I don't hate you. I'm doing this thing, whatever it is that you don't like, because I love you." And you are. You put your small children to bed when they still want to stay up because you love them. Not because you hate them, not because you're tired of them, although you may be that too. But I mean, the biggest reason why you put them to bed is because you want them to be healthy, you want them to grow. You make your slightly older children go to school and do their homework, do the chores that you've assigned, not because you're too lazy to do them yourself, but because it builds responsibility, because you love your kids enough to make them do things they don't want to do. If love was just doing what people wanted, well, I'm not quite sure what we'd have for a society, but I don't think I'd like it. And I don't think anyone else would either. Because sometimes love means doing things that are hard. And if we love the church, and if we love Jesus, And we love the people in the church. Every so often, and it doesn't happen very often, but every so often we need to go to somebody privately and say, this thing you're suggesting or what you said really hurt my feelings. Whatever it might be, there's all kinds of possibilities. But we go to them and we do it because we love them. It's hard. Confrontation is really difficult. This is another thing that I have met one person who liked conflict. Not because he liked fighting, because he liked the resolution. And he actually enjoyed the process, and he was incredibly good at it, which was good, because he caused lots of it himself. He was just one of those guys. But he was a professional, like he was a minister, and he had an intern once who was relating to me the story of during his internship, my classmate had a struggle with someone in the church, and he didn't really know what to do with it, and he didn't want to do anything with it. But the pastor, Harold, took him aside and said, look, you need to address this. He said, yeah, but I don't know how. He said, well, that's okay. You don't have to know how. I mean, you're learning. That's why you're here. He said, so this is what's going to happen. You're going to go to them, and you're going to say this, and they're going to say that in response, and you're going to say this, and they're going to say that in response, and then you're going to say this, and the conflict will be over. So, really? He said, yeah, that's the way it is. And because Harold had this deep understanding of the conflicts that arise between people, and it went almost to script. I mean, it took a little bit longer, but like the interchange was like that. And at the end of it, the conflict was resolved. It wasn't pleasant to go through it, but the resolution at the end was. Think of the conflict that you've had in your most significant relationships, you know, with a spouse or parents or children or close friends, whatever it might be. And whether you fight or not, you're still going to have conflict at some point. People sometimes ask, you know, how Heather and I have never had a fight. At least what neither one of us would describe what we've ever had as a fight. Neither one of us like it. We've had lots of conflict. We've had lots of disagreements. But just the kind of people we are, for good or ill, we just don't fight. But when we go through these things, when we finally realize that, okay, we have to talk about this, we seem to be going in different directions, it's never pleasant. But we come out of it loving each other more. The relationship comes out of it stronger than it was before. It's almost a paradox in that you would think that if you go and you tell somebody, you know, I just can't stand it when you do this thing, and you're going to have to stop doing it, or we're going to have to do something. And they say, well, what do you mean? I don't even know I'm doing that. Or they say, well, how could anybody be bothered by that? Whatever it might be, these are never pleasant conversations to have. And yet, we come out of them stronger. How does that work? I'm sure there's lots of lengthy psychological reasons why it does. What they are doesn't really matter, because they do. They work. We address conflict because we love the person, not because we dislike them. We deal with problems in the church when we're trying to decide between two ostensibly equally good directions to go, where both sides feel strongly that one is right over the other. We deal with that, messy as it sometimes is, unpleasant as it frequently is, because when we come together through that, we're unified. It actually builds us up when we treat each other with the respect that it takes to listen to somebody else's argument, someone else's position. When we demonstrate that we love them enough, that we don't want anything to come between us. Might not be easy, but it sure is worth it. Because love, that first debt of love that Paul talks about, where it's, in a very real sense, it's all about us. I mean, not obviously you can't commit murder against yourself, you can't steal from yourself, but you know what I mean. It's, you know, when you shall not do these things. If we like, we can look at those as this is all about me. But what Jesus talks about in Matthew is all about us, the larger picture of our relationships, particularly in the church. And if we love the people around us enough, we're going to love them enough to say things they might not want to hear. And we're going to love them enough to hear things from them that we don't want to hear either. Paying our debts, well, whether it's easy or not, it's just an obligation. It's something that we need to do. It's part of, well, it's part of being a grown-up when it comes to dealing with, you know, the debts you have, as opposed to when you're little, when you're, it depends what age you cut this off at, 8 or 9, 10. When children under that ask to borrow money from you, well, I've never heard of a 7-year-old paying their father back. It's just one of those things. We're not talking about those kinds of debts. But the debt of love, that responsibility that we have to love each other as we love ourselves. And beyond that, to love each other enough that we're willing to say things that might temporarily hurt somebody's feelings, that might temporarily strain the relationship, because it will. But we value the other person so much that we're willing to risk that, that they might become whole, that they might understand what they need to understand, and that our relationship might be strengthened. Well, we do it because we love them. And no matter how many times your children say, well, you don't, if you love me, I've always enjoyed that one, if you love me, you would do whatever. Oddly enough, most of the time, they get that wrong. I'm not quite sure why. Off the top of my head, I don't remember my kids saying, if you love me, you'd make me go to bed earlier. Or I've never heard of any kid say that, though I suppose it's happened at least once. But if we love people, and we do, we're willing to take risks that will strain those relationships, that will make us uncomfortable, not because we love discomfort, but because we love the person. We confront people about the behavior that they're doing that's self-destructive because we love them. And paying that debt, whether it's easy or not easy, is one that we owe. We owe it to the person we love, and we owe it to God. So pay your debts. I have no concerns about you paying your legal and financial obligations. That's got nothing to do with it. And I'm not particularly worried that you're harboring debts of love that you're unwilling to pay. But it's a reminder to us that when we take these steps, when we do these things that sometimes are hard, we do them because we have to, but we do them because we love the person that we're doing them with, and we love our Lord. Amen.